Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. First State historian and author David Tabler has written a new book about the unique, unusual, and lesser-known aspects of Delaware's past. In Delaware, from railways to freeways, Tabler offers dozens of stories and historical photos from Delaware in the 19th century, including a first-of-its-kind 1874 peach sorter and the crawlspace in the Corbett Sharp House where Quaker abolitionists Daniel and Mary Corbett hid a fugitive slave in 1845. In this edition of History Matters, Delaware Public Media's Kyle McKinnon sits down with Tabler to discuss the book and the people, places, and ideas that have shaped Delaware.
You've written Delaware from railways to freeways. It's the second part in three phases. So rewind things back a bit for us and tell us about that first installment and how each part fits together in your series.
Right. So the first that I did in this three-book series is Delaware Before the Railroads, and that came out in fall of 2022. And then this book came out in fall of 2023. I'm working on the third book right now, which will come out this fall. And this new book will be called Delaware from Freeways to E-Ways. So I'm basically tracing the history of Delaware via the lens of the transportation world. And that's particularly crucial in a state like Delaware, because for the first 150 years or so, the only way you could deal with getting back and forth in Delaware was via ship. And so that's why all of our early towns in Delaware are right on the coast. Lewis, Newcastle, Dover was accessible through the Jones River. And it's only later in the 19th century when the railroads come in, when you start to get towns like Felton and Clayton and Merrydale and so forth. All of these were railroad towns, and they were all built specifically for the railroads. And then, of course, in the third book, I'll be talking about Coleman DuPont and his building of Route 13, which of course is DuPont Highway. And that suddenly challenged the railroads to supremacy. Before that, if you had a town, you had to be very close to the railroad so that you could deliver your goods. But suddenly Route 13 opened everything up to trucking, and a town in Delaware could literally be based anywhere that was accessible by road. So that's kind of the broad overview of my series.
In this second part, the book is full of photos and with captions or accompanying stories or what have you that essentially, you know, they take you on this journey through Delaware and what really life was like here in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. It's obviously in the title, and you just kind of laid things out really, you know, really nicely in terms of the railroad, the invention of the railroad, how it, you know, ushered in this so-called, you know, prosperous era in the first state. Can you give us kind of like an idea of what kind of prosperous era we're talking about here?
So the mills came in around the 1830s, right around the same time that the railroad was arriving in Delaware. And the thing about the mills that was so crucial to Delaware's success is that prior to the 1830s, mills were seen as something where you simply grind your wheat for your bread or your barley for your beer. But by the 1830s, engineers were figuring out how to attach hydropower to machinery, to gears. And suddenly all kinds of industries sprung up in Wilmington specifically, but also elsewhere. Mostly Wilmington because of the Brandywine River and its rapid moving water. And so as a result, you had hundreds of mills that were built literally side by side in Wilmington. And that propelled Wilmington far above every other town in the state. But it wasn't until the 1830s where we had a system where we could deliver those goods that were created by the mills in Wilmington to the mainland. And that's where the railroad really fit in the missing piece.
Would you say Delaware was in line when other states started seeing and regions of the young United States of America, the young country, were they in line with other states when they saw, you know, rail for the first time? Was Delaware ahead of the curve when it comes to this?
Delaware was a little bit ahead of the curve. We actually had the fourth railroad, commercial railroad in the country. And the purpose there was to get goods from Philadelphia. They'd come down the bay via ship, they'd land at Newcastle, and then the stagecoaches would pick up and carry them over land, that short 10 or 15 mile hop to Frenchtown. And from there, they would pick up by ship again, and then go down to Baltimore and Norfolk. So the interesting thing about the first railroad in Delaware is that it wasn't conceived as something that would haul steam locomotives. And that's always a surprise when people hear that. The original railway was meant to elevate stagecoaches because the stagecoach was the way that things were being delivered in that 1830s era. And so they put the first stagecoaches up on rails. And if you think of how railroads are built today, the railway bed, you think of wooden cross ties, but the first railways did not use those. They actually had square granite blocks on which the iron rails were set. Why would they do that? Well, the point was you had a horse drawing your stagecoach running between these two rails. And if you had wooden ties, the horse's hooves would keep hitting those and tripping it, and at the very least, slow it down and possibly pull it over. And so by setting the rails up on granite blocks, that middle area between the two rails was wide open.
Outside of rail, there are countless photos and bite-sized stories to choose from. You know, you write about why Delaware has older covered bridges, which I found really interesting. You know, the background on Return Day, William Huffington's Delaware Register and Farmers Magazine, especially love that one too. You have examples of old style graffiti, John Jones's adjustable peach sorter. There's the Corbett Sharp crawl space. You know, you really run the gambit here, Dave. What are some of the most interesting photos or stories that stuck out to you though, when you're, you know, putting all this together?
I'm always fascinated by the story of why Scrapple is so important to the Delaware psyche. I moved here about 14 years ago, and that was the first thing that made me scratch my head. You know, Scrapple is nothing more than fried pork, and lots of places in the world have fried pork. So what is the big deal with Scrapple? And so I explore that in the book, and it actually comes, it circles back to this idea of Delaware's cultural identity. So Scrapple is made from bits of pork that are not otherwise named, you know, eyelids and ears and just bits and pieces. And so you would naturally assume, oh, okay, well, the name Scrapple must be then from scraps of pig, but that's not at all the historical reality of where the name comes from. And so the name comes from German immigrants to the Delaware region. So they came from the Palatinate region, which is in southwest Germany, where Bavaria is today. And they were fleeing the 30 Years' War. So you can imagine, you know, you can transpose that today. Think of what someone in Gaza is going through right this very minute. You know, they're starving. Their houses have been decimated. Well, that's what it was like after the 30 Years' War in the Palatinate region of Germany. And so those people were looking to get the hell out of there and find a better life for themselves. And so they first came over through Philadelphia in about 1700 or so, and they went up to the Lancaster, Pennsylvania region. And then they filtered down, the German immigrants filtered down into our area by around the early 1800s. And so Scrapple was a point of cultural pride to the German immigrants because it represented the fact that despite the angst of war that surrounded them for 30 years, they were able to feed themselves by picking up the bits and pieces of the pig, by the things that were discarded by other people. And so that plays into the Delaware sense of independence. You know, if you look back in colonial era Delaware, we were governed initially by the Calverts of Maryland. So they were, you know, this peninsula was initially deeded to the Calvert family. Then the Swedes came in and they governed us for a while. And then the Dutch came in and they governed us for a while. And the English overthrew the Dutch and the Swedes, but they governed us from far away in New York City, New Amsterdam at the time. And so Delawareans, or people that have lived on this peninsula for hundreds of years, have felt the need to be independent because government is always far away and always not speaking to them at the local level. And so Scrapple represents that ability to make things work despite having very few resources at hand. And that, I believe, is the real reason why Scrapple is a point of pride. It has nothing to do with the flavor or its curious name. You know, you don't find it in very many other places in the country.
Kind of sticking with that same thread, Dave, from your perspective, you know, how does understanding, again, you know, something like Scrapple is, or, you know, that almost is a good, you know, metaphor, whatnot for this, but how does understanding history, like what you're writing about, how does understanding this history inform, you know, Delaware's identity today and how we perceive Delaware?
Well, about a month ago, the News Journal ran an article with the headline, "Delaware Lacks a Cultural Identity." I think part of the issue is the fact that our children and our grandchildren are online all the time. They're not out and about exploring the physical terrain around Delaware. And this is not necessarily just a Delaware issue. This is nationwide and probably worldwide. And so I think that was compounded back in the, during the COVID era when kids were just bottled up. They couldn't go anywhere. And so I feel there's a real need to get out and explore what it is, the place that you live in, because there are things about it that are unique to that place that aren't found elsewhere. For example, in Delaware, the horseshoe crab. We're only one of two states where the horseshoe crab breeds in America. The other is New Jersey. And it's an amazing thing to take a kid down to Slaughter Beach or one of the beaches, in May and June when the horseshoe crabs are spawning. They come up twice a day at low tide and high tide. You can just look up and down the beach as far as the eye can see, and you see hundreds and hundreds of thousands of horseshoe crabs. That's a rich cultural underpinning to give to a kid as part of growing up. You know, when they go to Arizona or to Chicago and they talk about that, that's something that those kids don't experience in those places. And so that gives the Delaware child a sense of, I'm from a place that's unique and special. And if you don't do that, if you just let kids stay online all the time and don't take them out into the surroundings, you miss that opportunity as a parent or an uncle or aunt or grandparent.
Thanks to author and historian David Tabler and our Kyle McKinnon for showing us why history matters this week.